Not only did Congress not manage to figure out a way around sequestration before the March 1st deadline, with this week's passage of a 2013 government funding bill, lawmakers explicitly left the automatic $85 billion spending cuts in place for the rest of the year. Seasoned defense observers say it's a virtual certainty that sequestration is here to stay, and about the only people who don't realize that fact are DOD senior leadership. Mackenzie Eaglin is a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
The department, if you read a lot of the stories from our peers in the room and our reporter friends, the department admits they didn't expect the sequester to happen, at least many senior people in the department. And now that it's here, there is still an element of denial that it's going to stay in place. But it's crystal clear from the CR that it will. Now, if it stays in place for 9 more years, that's an open question, but it certainly is staying in place for 2013 and the foreseeable future. We're waiting on the president's budget, which is coming to any day now, but we expect it to ignore the sequester.
That choice is presumably based on hope that Congress and the president will reach an overarching long-term budget bargain that will replace sequestration. But Gordon Adams of the Stimson Center, who spoke alongside Eaglin and other experts at an AEI budget forum, says there's a solid consensus among defense watchers across the political spectrum that defense dollars are coming down, even beyond the $487 billion DOD's already sliced from its previously planned spending.
There doesn't seem to be a consensus in the Pentagon, and I share McKenzie's sense that there still is some creeping lack of realism over there, or fingers crossed, or hope that somehow this will all go away and be better. And I was struck by the stories coming out this week that the Defense Department's about to send up a budget that is going to accept another $100 billion worth of cuts over the 10-year time frame, but push them all past 2019. As a longtime planner, that's a scenario that doesn't make any sense at all, except in la-la land, because those aren't real cuts. Anything that happens after 2019, I may not even be alive for it, and sure as hell most people in the room aren't going to affect it. So I doubt seriously that that does not suggest to me a stunning degree of realism.
Adams says realism would mean accepting the fact that DOD is coming out of a wartime environment and funding is going to decline, whether sequestration stays in place per se or not.
The bottom line reality here, it's a reality that I've been saying I know for at least 4 years, is we're in a drawdown. We are in a drawdown. Budgets down 10% real terms since 2010, procurement down 20% since 2010 in real terms, including the OCO. And OCO is part of the resources that slush through the building. So to me, those are the right places to begin to do the counting. And the Pentagon still somehow doesn't quite get it. The Hagel instruction that came out a couple of days ago basically was described by one senior defense official as a contingency plan. Well, we hope this won't happen. We don't expect this to happen. It's a contingency plan. The reality to me is not about sequester. The reality is we're in a drawdown. And sequester accelerates a drawdown, but it's a drawdown nonetheless, and that's a consensus that most everybody seems to have about what's happening here. So the question is how to go about it sensibly.
Sequestration, which slices away evenly at almost all of DOD's programs and projects, was constructed by design to cut the budget in a nonsensible way so that Congress would find an alternative. But Todd Harrison from the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments believes DOD and the White House made those nonsensical cuts even worse by staying in denial about the fact that they were a realistic possibility for the past full year.
None of us could have said a year ago that it was certain we would be under sequester right now, but it was perfectly foreseeable that that was a real possibility. There are things DOD could have done to start preparing for that. But I look back, and I think it was September 20th, Carter put out a memo to DOD that specifically said, do not start preparing for sequestration. Do not start cutting back on your spending. Spend at the current rate as if sequestration is not going to happen. We're not going to self-sequester ourselves. That was the guidance to DOD, and I believe they followed it. And so what happened? Well, you know, here we are. You know, sequestration took effect on March 1st, 5 months into the fiscal year, and a lot of these accounts that spend at a regular rate, they had spent 5/12 of their money by then. So they have to take the cut in the remaining 7 months of the year. It's a smaller pool of money that makes the cut steeper. It gives you less flexibility.
But Harrison says it didn't have to be that way. Other federal agencies have proven, he says, that it was possible to blunt the impact of sequestration by imposing internal restraint on spending. His example is the Government Accountability Office.
They did some early buyouts, early retirements. They did a hiring freeze. And they actually are at a point right now where they already have cut their headcount so that they don't have to furlough anyone. It looks like they're not going to have any furloughs because of sequestration. Could DOD have been doing some of that? Could DOD have instituted a hiring freeze for civilian personnel sooner than they did, and then the impact on furloughs could be minimized? Of course they could have. They could have cut back on spending in some of these operation and maintenance accounts sooner, and then they would be able to spread the pain out over a larger period of time. There are a lot of things they could have done, but they didn't. And now what we're seeing is a similar thing for FY14. They are again assuming the reductions in the budget caps that have been in effect ever since the super committee failed. They're assuming the reductions in the budget cap are going to go away in FY14.
But experts say if history is any guide, that assumption is exceedingly unrealistic for DOD in the context of a post-war build-down. So instead, the department should be doing things now to significantly cut its costs. For EEI's Mackenzie Eaglin, that means beginning to shrink the overhead and infrastructure expenses that gradually expanded throughout the military during the past decade of war.
Are they not just further kicking the can on the need to reduce bureaucracy, overhead, infrastructure, in some cases acquisition? Because those are the really four pots, those are the four big areas we've all targeted. But that's basically what we're talking about, the civilian workforce, the 760 plus thousand DOD civilian workforce that's been untouched for 4 years for a reduction of really any significant number, while the active duty military has been dropping pretty significantly. The base closure process, yes, DOD proposed a BRAC last year, but it was not a serious proposal. There was no money in it to actually start the BRAC. It costs money before you make money or save it into the BRAC process.
Experts say it's also imperative for the Pentagon to bring the cost growth among its uniformed service members out of control. But they hesitate to pin the blame for that on DOD's shoulders. Congress hasn't exactly been helpful on that score. DOD proposed measures last year to reduce that annual growth rate in military pay and benefits from around 4% per year to less than 1%. Congress rejected almost all of those ideas. Clark Murdoch of the Center for Strategic and International Studies points out lawmakers have been willing to change those benefits only in ways that make them cost more.
The budget went up 40% in real time from between 2001 to 2010, 40%. Active duty manpower went up only 3%. That's why we have so many civilians. That's why we have so many contractors. They couldn't afford active duty personnel. And why they had so many reserve components called up to pay active duty manpower hours. The buildup during the post 9/11 period was all in the civilian area because active duty manpower had essentially priced itself out of the market. Now, when they go back, the drawdown, previous drawdowns have always gone back to about $400 billion per year in constant dollars, in FY13 dollars. This one will go down to about $510 billion. More than $100 billion more for the force, but it's going to be a force that's a third smaller than the one we had in 1978. This is internal cost growth.
Murdoch says in other areas of Pentagon spending, from acquisition overruns to operation and maintenance spending, the only way to meaningfully reduce internal cost growth is to set limits on spending from the outside.
This can only be done with a strong Secretary of Defense who actually takes control of the budgeting process, controls the dollars. They're not the Commandant's dollars. They're not the MAGCOM dollars in the Air Force, the MACOM dollars in the Army. They're the Secretary's dollars, and they're provided by the taxpayer. And he's the one that has to take control of those dollars and of the database. And he's not going to do, you know, you've got to cut this staff by so much, this staff by so much. He's going to say, you get 30% of your budget for institutional stuff. That's your overhead. That's your organized training and equipment. That's it. You figure it out. That's the only way it works. Cost caps.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.